Now, next week we plan to be talking. We have set up an interview with Olive Senior. I think, Phil, you know Olive Senior.
I certainly do.
Yeah, it's your pleasure to know. She has written a book called Dying to Better Themselves, West Indians and the Building of the Panama Canal. And there's a song that is sort of in the middle of this book, in a way, because people went from Jamaica, Barbados, elsewhere in the Caribbean to build that canal. And as a result of their going there, they transformed Panama. The isthmus was transformed by the presence of Jamaicans and Barbadians and others. And there's a song that kind of captured it. We're going to play a bit of that song right now.
Over there and cheer him up. Hi, Colin man. We are not laughing at you. We are laughing with you. We want you to come over and jam with us now to sing this song.
1, 2, 3, 4, Colin man, I come. 1, 2, 3, 4, Colin man, I come. 1, 2, 3, 4, Colin man, I come. It is brass and a licking belly, pum, pum, pum.
Zoot, zoot, I grass, Maria can I come. Zoot, zoot, eyeglass, mirror canna come. Zoot, zoot, eyeglass, mirror canna come. With them brass chain, a licking belly, prum, prum, prum.
1, 2, 3, 4, Colin manna come.
That's me.
1, 2, 3, 4, Colin manna come.
That's me.
1, 2, 3, 4, Colin manna come. With his brass chain, a licking belly,
there you go, Taylor Report, CAT. And that song captures a lot of the spirit. All kinds of poems and songs and stories. But this was a great building effort. You remember? I mean, you weren't there, Phil, but it was the Panama Canal.
Oh, of course, but when we were taught about it, it's nothing like what Olive has found in her book. It was Teddy Roosevelt built it, or,
yes.
some big American stepped in there and did all the work, right?
And yes, exactly. Yeah. And we heard that there were deaths from malaria, but they were all white deaths. So, yeah, no, this book is going to capture all this in. You know, I've been reading it, and I'm anxious to get through it all because, the pictures in this book are fantastic.
Oh, it's an amazing book, isn't it?
And I listened to Colin Mann, and I saw you can go on the internet. There are lectures given by Olive Senior.
So, no, I don't want to give away anything that Olive will tell us, but I mean, she will. Tell you, when she grew up in Jamaica, there would be people who pointed out, well, he was in Panama, that one there over there was in Panama. And it had a profound effect on other countries, you know, because the people left and many of them came back. You know.
Yes. And all those, we're going to get in all those details with Olive, because two-thirds of the workforce were black people from Caribbean, and they were dying to better themselves, as the title is. By the way, this is available to a different book list at
746 Bathurst Street, yes.
I always wonder, I'm dyslexic, so I always turn everything around. 746.
746 Bathurst.
Did I get it right that time?
And it's Olive Senior's Dying to Better Themselves. It's a
West
great
Indians,
book.
West Indians in the Building of the Panama Canal. And this story, and incidentally, it's not just the canal, there was the railroad. There were three sort of historical phases, as near as I can make. I do know one detail. I'll make sure I ask Olive about this. But there has been stories about the American Civil War and the issue of ending of slavery. And there were forces in the United States, just as there were in Britain, about what are you going to do with this slave population? And some said, well, we will use them to we'll invite them to go somewhere. One of the places that one group wanted them to go was Panama, because they already had this plan that they were going to grab that and build a railroad or whatever. And so they wanted to try. And there were even some African-Americans who were freedmen who went there. And they came back and said, don't do that. And it's a tremendous story, very important one. Of course, that's where the great story of Balboa was the first to see the Pacific Ocean of a European to see. He climbed a tree by legend and looked, and he said, muy pacífico, very calm. And so that's what it ended up, by climbing a tree, he entered history books. And the colon, by the way, colon, and I think this is going to be, we'll ask Oliver about it, but there is also the question of how you, if you're Spanish is it's from Christopher Colon. They wanted a name after Columbus. The Americans actually wanted a name like Algeld or Frankfurter or Busby, you know, but they didn't win. And those who lived there and worked. Just a detail too that I've already gained from this book, that the white Americans who came there were paid different wages. They were paid in gold, and the those from the West Indies were paid in silver. So you had silver wages and gold wages. And those who got gold wages, by the way, was higher, just simply on a racial basis. So we've teased you enough with that. And if you want to just give yourself a boost, go on the net and write Colin Mann the song, and it will cheer you up. It's a wonderful tune, and it has and there's so much story in it. That it's you get it's a great pleasure. Now, some other matters. We were speaking, of course, earlier about the issue that the Black Agenda Report, where the article by Thomas Mountain can be found. There's a kind of a debate going on, and I think it's a useful one, of evaluating Black Lives Matter and where it might go, what the issues, how it's going to impact. It's a sad thing, but in politics, elections have a way of distorting everything. People who are doing work against war, people who are doing work, for example, here on the recognition of Palestinian rights, equal treatment under the international law, et cetera, they find themselves crunched in electoral campaigns. Now, we spoke last week, I think, Bernie Sanders' campaign. There have been a couple moments where Black Lives Matter people spoke up, as they have every right to do. And the question was that good or bad? And of course, if Bernie Sanders isn't going to speak up on the issue, of course it's good, because it should be on the top of the agenda. But there are people asking why nobody's been over to Hillary's campaign and spoken there and asked Hillary what she thinks, because, frankly, she hasn't shown any inclination to say a thing. This is a great watershed and dividing line in American politics. The Southern strategy of both the Republicans and the Democrats is never to let that issue take over. Because they follow a white supremacist line of the majority might turn on you, and so, or the black demands will alienate your vote. That's the theory. It's a racist theory, and Bill Clinton's a believer in that. Richard Nixon, as we know, he gave us the expression. It's an old expression, but Richard Nixon revived it, called the Southern Strategy. But see, this is a broad issue of people's rights, and nobody has to stand on ceremony and wait around. The greatest title of the book, of a book written by Martin Luther King, was "Why We Cannot Wait," because the Democratic Party and the Republican Party always had a standard line with black voters. vote for us, and then wait. And that's so. It's good. This ground is being turned over. And in addition, there is the issue of Bernie Sanders, and this is raised by Christopher Hedges, who writes brilliantly, and does I put it in italics, passionately. The problem is, and this happened with Jesse Jackson and the Rainbow Coalition, you go into the Democratic Party, you raise issues, you don't get nominated, and you're expected to work your butt off for the guy who is against every last thing you believe in. So the question is, how long do you do that? Or why do you do it? And people are very suspicious because, once again, elections distort everything. People just drop whatever they're doing, and then there is the great boogeyman. Oh, the Republicans might take over, and they might bomb somebody. They might invade somebody. and of course, it's a false picture. Because the dividing line between Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton doesn't exist. It's just a question of, what's your favorite name? Do you prefer this one or that one? Every last evil thing could be done abroad. She did as equally as the other party. So anyway, I'm really glad that this matter is being debated. We have our own issues. And NDP members are being told to line up, salute, and go away. People who were nominated or seeking nomination told to go away because somebody found a quote from them saying that the Palestinians have rights or that Israel shouldn't have bombed the Gaza.
Latest case, the gentleman in Edmonton said he merely repeated on Facebook what Amnesty International had said. He used Amnesty's words, and he was told by the NDP that he could not be their candidate because of the words he used in Facebook, which came from Amnesty.
And by the way, also to introduce a cynical note, and politics requires cynicism to those who practice it at the highest levels. I understand there's a couple people who have said things that are stronger than Amnesty did who are candidates who are not being asked to step down. Why? Because apparently they are going to win. And so you don't ask the winning guys to step. You take a couple of guys who don't have a shot and you publicly execute them to impress somebody. But the one who agreed with them and has never said he disagreed with them goes ahead and runs.
But that one could be a number towards your majority. Yes,
because he's going to get elected.
Yeah. Well, but by the way, also what happened?
Or she?
What happened?
I'm going to be Mr. He or she.
What happened here in Toronto is that a very popular candidate who was not Mulcair's choice, frankly, Linda McQuaig, said something. She said, quoting scientists, who said that if we're going to meet the emissions targets, some of the oil sands oil might have to stay in the ground. That's how she said it. Might have to stay in the ground, right? That's all she said. And of course, now they're pillorying her, and Mulcair is keeping his distance from her. He's not disqualifying her as a candidate because it's too far gone. She's a very popular candidate, and she has an excellent chance of winning. But he's keeping his distance now because she said that.
Yeah, well, by the way, I mean the electorate is not all sitting over the oil sands. I don't understand that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is called regional strategy. I mean, there are vast portions of our population dead against the use of the oil sands at all.
Absolutely.
Including, by the way, I think the President of the United States. Am I right?
Well, that seems to be. He certainly put a major stick in Stephen Harper's legacy by the way he has
messed up that operation.
Well,
to
use a hockey expression, he's ragged the puck on it for 8 years, right? And he just won't give it back, right? So it's like so Harper stuck with it, right? And Harper is said to really.
Yeah, he's got tar on his face.
Yeah,
but that's what we're talking about. Is it so? But when Mulcair does this, he's just this is called dancing, and it's quite offensive to people trying to follow this. Your party is saying, "Oh, we have to worry," and yes, we're facing ecological disaster. However, we can use the tar sands. You can't say all those things at once. You have to. And they all say, don't ask me to be charismatic. Don't ask me to lead anything. Don't ask me to be – just – they all play defense. How can I back into office? Let me see if I can back in. I'll try to feel my way along the wall till I come to the door, and then I'll back in. That's what we're watching. But by the way, now on this show, we've supported the postal workers, and we want to keep our mailmen and all that. And you know, they started coming in with the mailbox thing where you can walk 3 blocks through the snow and try to pry it open with your frozen fingers because of Harper. And, well, the mayor of Montreal destroyed the foundation for one of those things. He went down there with
a jackhammer.
Was it a jackhammer?
It was a jackhammer.
Oh, he's lazy. I thought he was going to use a pick.
I
was trying to use it. Yeah. I used to swing one of those, but yeah. I can't even say what it is anymore. Yeah, but anyhow,
he wouldn't. That guy.
He
wouldn't
did it. Yeah. That's the mayor of Montreal. Yeah. Now, I would say, why don't he issue a challenge to this guy, something Tory? You say, well, when are you going to do something? That is amazing. And I only found that out by reading David Heap's Twitter. Go to David Heap's Twitter account. And I'm not just saying that to get David in trouble with the Mokere. Okay? I know that.
He's probably already there.
I think he's already in trouble. But thank goodness he is. He's an inspiration, that guy. But it was him who posted it. I haven't seen it talked about elsewhere because, again, it embarrasses some of these candidates. I don't know what the NDP thinks of that, if they're going to make anything of it. Now, look, we should say, too, that Jeremy Corbyn looks like a good chance to lead the Labour Party. And I notice now the panic has developed in the Labour Party brass, in particular from Tony Blair's camp, where they're bringing out the artillery, you know, trying to accuse him of everything. But I find it music to my ears. Listen, hello, NDPers. Let me tell you something. There is a guy running to lead the Great Mama Party, the Labour Party in England, who is belongs to the Palestine Solidarity Organization in Britain. And he also says that the U.S. and NATO are causing the problem with Ukraine. It's their aggressive policy. He also says that he would be in favor of leaving NATO. Ooh, now there's a labor leader. And not only that, Jeremy Corbyn lives within his means. He could embarrass Rob Ford because he is not personally wealthy, but he says we're paid adequate. I don't need all this extra stuff, and he simply doesn't live like that. And of course, he said he grew a beard because he said to irritate Tony Blair. He was an MP before Blair, and he's an MP after. He's extremely popular, and these are important stands on Ukraine, on Palestine. He's also in favor.
Well, on NATO. He says they should leave NATO.
Leave NATO.
And nuclear weapons. He says Britain should not have a nuclear arsenal and shouldn't have nuclear weapons on British soil.
And nobody else should have them either. So it seems to be a rational individual who cares about the people as opposed to, you know, the 1%. And this is the chance we have. So good for them. We will watch. He's being baited. They're accusing him of every crime. But Jeremy Corbyn, and they're going to decide soon. They introduced an idea of, as they did here, of separating the union movement, basically, from labor. And this was Tony Blair's brilliant idea. But Corbyn wants to bring it back. He says, no, we have to have a close association with labor. By the way, two of the biggest unions of Britain are supporting him. And I love the acrimony because there's a lot of stone throwing going on between these people. And of course, all of them act like they're princes of the realm, you know, that if Lord Hattersley, for example, is telling us, my goodness, if you go to that man. And as though now we're all supposed to just drop what we're doing and follow Lord Hattersley. He's the Lord. We're not, as I understand it. So anyway, kind of important. This is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. And I was going to, I'll tell you a brief story. We had on this program Robert Mirapol, who is the son of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. There is ongoing controversy now. He and his brother written a great letter to the New York Times arguing for their innocence of their mother and that she should be cleared. But I would just want to tell our listeners, I was reading Roy Cohn, who was a 23-year-old prosecutor, and I think the case ought to be revisited and thrown out because Roy Cohn said in his autobiography that he was on the phone every day to Judge Kaufman. He also went to the judge's chambers, he and the judge, discussing the fate of the Rosenbergs. He also says that he lobbied personally to get Kaufman the job as the judge, that they were allies in getting Kaufman named to be the judge. So why doesn't America just face the music and throw the whole case out? Because that is a disgrace. I would tell John Kerry, you're interested in democracy? That is a disgrace. Anyhow, you're listening to the Tate Report. Listen, go over to the different book list. It's 7 o'clock. There's going to be a talk tonight by a woman who's an authority on precious metals in Africa. And Lucas, thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.